Edna's Sacrifice and Other Stories. Edna's Sacrifice. By Frances Henshaw Bodden. It was a cold night in September. For 3 days the rain had fallen almost unceasingly. It had been impossible for us to get out, and no visitors had been in. Everything looked dreary enough, and we felt so, truly. Of course the stoves were not prepared for use, and this night we, that is, Nell, Floy, Aunt Edna, and myself, were huddled in the corners of the sofa and armchairs, wrapped in our shawls. We were at our wits' end for something to while the hours away. We had read everything that was readable, played until we fancied the piano sent forth a wail of complaint, and begged for rest, were at the backgammon board until our arms ached, and I had given imitations of celebrated actresses, until I was hoarse, and Nell declared I was in danger of being sued for scandal. What more could we do? To dispel the drowsiness that was stealing over me, I got up, walked up and down the floor, and then drew up the blind, and gazed out into the deserted street. Not a footfall to be heard, neither man's nor beasts, nothing but patter, patter, patter. At length, after standing fully 15 minutes, oh, joyful sound! A coming footstep, firm and quick. My first thought was that those steps would stop at our door. But, directly after, I felt that very improbable, for who was there that would come such a night? Papa was up north with Mama, Nell and Flora were visiting Aunt Edna and me, the only ones home, save the servants. Neither of us had as yet a lover so devoted or so demented as to come out, if he had anywhere to stay in. On and past went the steps. Turning away, I drew down the blind, and said, "Someone must be ill," and that was the doctor, surely, for no one else would go out, only those from direst necessity sent. A deep sigh escaped Aunt Edna's lips, and although partially shaded by her hand, I could see the shadow on the beautiful face had deepened. Why my aunt had never married was a mystery to me, for she was lovable in every way, and must have been very beautiful in her youth. 36 she would be next May Day, she had told me. 36 seemed to me, just 16, a very great many years to have lived. But Aunt always was young to us, and the hint of her being an old maid was always resented, very decidedly, by all her nieces. "Aunt Edna," I said, "tell us a story, a love story, please." "Oh, little one, you have read so many. And what can I tell you more?" she answered, gently. "Oh, Andy, I want a true story. Do, darling Andy, tell us your own. Tell us why you are blessing our home with your presence, instead of that of some noble man, for noble he must have been to have won your heart, and, hush sh. Yes, yes, I know something about somebody, and I must know all. Do, please." I plead on. I always could do more with Aunt Edna than anyone else. I was named for her, and many called me like her, only not nearly so pretty was always added. At last she consented, saying, "Dear girls, to only one before have I given my entire confidence, and that was my mother. I scarce know why I have yielded to your persuasions, little Edna, save that this night, with its gloom and rain, carries me back long years, and my heart seems to join its pleading with yours, yearning to cast forth some of its fullness, and perchance find relief by pouring into your loving heart its own sorrows. But, darling, I would not cast my shadow over your fair brow, even for a brief time." With her hand still shading her face, Aunt Edna began. "Just such a night as this, 18 years ago, dear child, my fate was decided. The daughter of my mother's dearest friend had been with us about a year. Dearly we all loved the gentle child, for scarcely more than child she was, only 16. My mother had taken her from the cold, lifeless form of her mother into her own warm, loving heart, and she became to me as a sister. So fair and frail she was. We all watched her with the tenderest care, guarding her from all that could chill her sensitive nature or wound the already saddened heart. Lily was her name. Oh, what a delicate white lily she was when we first brought her to our home, but after a while she was won from her sorrow, and grew into a maiden of great beauty. Still, with childlike, winning ways. Great wells of love were in her blue eyes, violet hue he called them. Often I wondered if anyone's gaze would linger on my dark eyes when hers were near. Her pale golden hair was pushed off her broad forehead and fell in heavy waves far down below her graceful shoulders and over her black dress. Small delicately formed features, a complexion so fair and clear that it seemed transparent. In her blue eyes there was always such a sad, wistful look, this, and the gentle smile that ever hovered about her lips, gave an expression of mingled sweetness and sorrow that was very touching. You may imagine now how beautiful she was. Her mother had passed from earth during the absence of Lily's father. Across the ocean the sorrowful tidings were borne to him. He was a naval officer. Lily was counting the days ere she should see him. The good news had come, that soon he would be with her. At last the day arrived, but oh! What a terrible sorrow it brought! When her heart was almost bursting with joy, expecting every moment to be clasped in those dear arms, a telegraphic dispatch was handed in. Eagerly she caught it, tore it open, read, and fell lifeless to the floor. Oh! The fearful, crushing words. We read, not of his coming to Lily, but of his going to her, his wife, in heaven. Yes, truly an orphan the poor girl was then. In vain proved all efforts to restore her to consciousness. Several times, when she had before fainted, mother was the only physician needed. But that night she shook her head and said, "We must have a doctor, and quickly." It was a terrible night. Our doctor was very remote. Your father suggested another, nearby. Doctor, well, never mind his name. Your father said he had lately known him, and liked him much. Through the storm he came, and by his skillful treatment Lily was soon restored to consciousness, but not to health. A low nervous fever set in, and many days we watched with fearful hearts. Ah! During those days I learned to look too eagerly for the doctor's coming. Indeed, he made his way into the hearts of all in our home. After the dreaded crisis had passed, and we knew that Lily would be spared to us, the doctor told mother he should have to prescribe for me. I had grown pale, from confinement in the sick room, and he must take me for a drive, that the fresh air should bring the roses back to my cheeks. Willingly mother consented. After that I often went. When Lily was able to come downstairs, this greatest pleasure of my life then was divided with her. One afternoon I stood on the porch with her, waiting while the doctor arranged something about the harness. Oh! How I wish it was my time to go! She whispered. Well, darling, it shall be your time. I can go tomorrow. Run, get your hat and wraps, I said, really glad to give any additional pleasure to this child of many sorrows. No, no, that would not be fair. And, Edna, don't you know that tomorrow I would be so sorry if I went today? I do not mean to be selfish, but, oh, indeed I cannot help it. I am wishing every time to go. Not that I care for a ride, she hesitated, flushed, and whispered, I like to be with my doctor. Don't you, Edna? Oh! I wish he was my father, or brother, or cousin, just to be with us all the time, you know. Just then the doctor came for me, and I had to leave her. As we drove off I looked back and kissed my hand to her, saying, Dear little thing! I wish she was going with us. I do not, the doctor surprised me by saying. I raised my eyes inquiringly to his. In those beautiful, earnest eyes I saw something that made me profoundly happy. I could not speak. After a moment he added, She is a beautiful, winning child, and I enjoy her company. But when with her, I feel as if it was my duty to devote myself entirely to her, in a word, to take care of her, or, I should say, to care for her only. And this afternoon, of all others, I do not feel like having Lily with us. That afternoon was one of the happiest of my life. Although not a word of love passed his lips, I knew it filled his heart, and was for me. He told me of his home, his relatives, his past life. Of his mother he said, When you know her, you will love her dearly. He seemed to be sure that I should know her. And then, ah, well, I thought so too, then. Lily was waiting for us when we returned. He chided her for being out so late. It was quite dark. Tears filled her eyes as she raised them to his and said, Don't be angry. I could not help watching. Oh, why did you stay so long? I thought you would never come back. I was afraid something had happened, that the horse had run away, or... Angry I could not be with you, little one. But I don't want you to get sick again. Come, now, smile away your tears and fears. Your friend is safe and with you again, the doctor answered. Taking her hand, he led her into the parlor. He had not understood the cause of her tears. Only for him she watched and wept. Do stay, she pleaded, when her doctor was going. He told her he could not, then, there was another call he must make, but would return after a while. She counted the minutes, until she should see him again. Never concealing from any of us how dearly she loved him. She was truly as guileless as a child of 6 years. From the first of her acquaintance with him, she had declared her doctor was like her father. Mother, too, admitted the resemblance was very decided. This it was, I think, that first made him so dear to her. Several times, after the doctor returned that evening, I saw he sought opportunity to speak to me, unheard by others. But Lily was always near. Ah! It was better so. Better that from his own lips I heard not those words he would have spoken.